Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, it was just last week where we looked at the latest Gallup approval numbers for President Obama, and for the first time in his administration, he was below 40% on approval ratings. So I guess these new head-to-head polling matchups from Gallup between the president and some of the top-tier Republican presidential candidates shouldn't be too surprising. But nonetheless, with months before the Republicans actually go before the voters and before I think most people really have a crystal-clear idea of what these Republicans stand for, you already have Mitt Romney ahead of Barack Obama among registered voters. You have Rick Perry tied after a week and a half on the campaign trail. Ron Paul is within two. Michelle Bachmann within four. The president is pretty consistent, anywhere between about 46 to 48%. So he is still under 50%, which is good. He's still pretty close to 50%, which is not that great. But the fact that even folks who a lot of folks have described as unelectable are within the margin of error means that Barack Obama's got to be in pretty big trouble. And that means what was perceived to be a pretty weak field might not be that weak after all.
Completely true, Greg. And one of the things that kind of jumps out at me as I'm looking at this at Gallup is the observation. Remember, this is all registered voters. They haven't even put a screen for likely voters yet. So traditionally, Republicans do, you know, maybe about 2-3 points a little bit better amongst once you get down to likely voters. The sample usually involves a bunch of folks who are Democrats who are registered to vote, but who are kind of iffy on showing up to vote on election day. Could be young voters, could be folks who are don't know where their polling place is, or for whatever reason just aren't likely to show up or vote absentee. So the Republicans may be doing even a little bit better than this. I think they shouldn't overestimate their own chances. Still a lot of time to go. And clearly, you know, with each passing month, it becomes clearer the lone play remaining for President Obama is just to demonize the opposition, whether he's saying he's got to kill Mitt Romney, as one advisor said, or whether it'll be painting Rick Perry as a crazy secessionist or whatever they'll throw at Michelle Bachmann or Ron Paul. But what's interesting is that there are plenty of Republicans who are not over, you know, terribly high on Ron Paul. There are plenty of Republicans who are probably iffy on Michelle Bachmann. And, you know, they are close to neck and neck at this point. So I think this tells us more about Obama than it does about the Republican options. And we will see where things go from here. But I think if you're a Republican, look, this is a very winnable race. The Republican nomination is something worth winning because your chances are probably at least 50-50. And as the, you know, 2012 goes on, if we don't see an economic recovery, the chances of a Republican victory could look quite strong by then. So good news for these four. Absolutely. And you never know what if we'll have somebody else jump into the race, or whether we'll see a surge from some other figure, or whether these are, you know, likely to be the final four.
Yeah, I'd also like to see some polls as we get closer in some of the bellwether states, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Virginia, North Carolina, Florida, things such as that. But on to the potential of another candidate jumping into the race. And for months and months, Paul Ryan said, absolutely not. I'm not going to consider this race. I'm focused on my work as chairman of the House Budget Committee. And then Mitch Daniels decided not to run, the governor of Indiana. And so then Paul Ryan apparently decided to take a much closer look at this. And ultimately, after getting many hopes up, including mine, he once again says no. So Paul Ryan will be running for a re-election to the House. He will not be running for president. I really wanted to see him up on that debate stage amongst Republicans as well as against President Obama, because nobody articulates where we are economically better than Paul Ryan, and I would have loved to see him have that debate with the president and, of course, win it. But it wasn't just a day of no for Paul Ryan. It was also a no of Alan West in Florida for the U.S. Senate. He'll be running for re-election in the House. And the same for Jason Chaffetz in Utah, who a lot of people thought would be the next Mike Lee, taking on an entrenched Republican incumbent senator, this time in Orrin Hatch. And again, Chaffetz declining, saying that he's going to run for the re-election in the House again, which I think is probably the biggest surprise of the three.
On Ryan, I guess I was less surprised because I had heard less of the buzz that he had been looking at it. A couple of his folks had said that, well, he'd never really 100% ruled it out. But this is a guy who had been mentioned as a possible contender for the open Senate seat in Wisconsin and chosen not to pursue that. This is a guy who asked to not be on the super committee. Or Das Uber Committee, as I prefer to call it. And you think about it, you know, Greg, you think the presidency is powerful. Think about the super committee. So, you know, if he really had ambitions, he would have gone for that. I think he really likes where he is. I think he really believes that he can make, help shape policy from the House Budget Committee. And I just, you know, if he'd really been seriously thinking about it, yes, I understand he was talking to Rove and he talked to Rick Perry and he talked to a bunch of other folks. But I have a feeling that if he really wanted it, we would have seen staffing up and other types of decisions. So I have a feeling this was never that serious an option. In terms of Alan West, I think that's a perfectly fine decision. I'm a big fan of his, but I think there's nothing wrong with you get elected to the House, serve at least one full term in the House. You know, do your job, do what you're elected to do, build a record, and then jump to statewide office. The one that kind of jumps out the most is Chaffetz, and it's one of those things where Orrin Hatch, since Bennett got defeated last time, Orrin Hatch started drinking the tea in mass quantities, like a coonhead, just, you know, letting it dribble down his chin. And so to the point where I believe Mark Levin had said Orrin Hatch is just fine and endorsed him and basically said there's no need. And, you know, Orrin Hatch is one of those guys who there are certain times he can really drive conservatives crazy. And then there are other times that he's not that bad. A couple of these confirmation hearings for Supreme Court fights, I seem to remember Orrin Hatch really stepping it up. So I think that if you look at most people's concerns about Hatch, it really had more to do with the length of time he'd been there. I believe this is going to be his sixth term. He's been there 30 years, I want to say.
Yes, in 76, yeah.
So when a senator has been there, I believe, all of your life and almost all of my life, you know, naturally people start wondering if it's time for a little bit of new blood. I think Chaffetz would have been a very strong candidate, but, you know, it just didn't feel like it was the right time in the right place. And so I'm sure he'll have other opportunities in the future. It's kind of hard to imagine the Democrats winning a statewide race in Utah in a presidential election year. So we can, you know, at this point kind of congratulate Orrin Hatch on his sixth term.
Exactly.
Which appears to be a mere formality in my cynical mind right now.
Yeah, Utah's so interesting. Bennett obviously got surprised in 2010 because of that whole convention process. If the bad blood towards incumbency were still there, Chaffetz would have had a very good chance of winning at the convention, but he decided to go back to the House. But on to other people who may or may not be running. And Jim, I know you've been on vacation, but there's been this slowly growing theory out there, perhaps a wishful thinking theory, that because of his tanking numbers, the fact that the economy is not improving, and if anything, it's going in the opposite direction, the fact that he's completely frustrated with Republicans controlling a House of Congress, the fact that he might be just completely exhausted, that in the end, Barack Obama may not decide to even run for re-election, that he just sees the handwriting on the wall, doesn't want to face the chance of being humiliated in his bid for re-election, and then the Republicans would be able to potentially hold both houses of Congress and the presidency as a result of the public repudiating his agenda. I don't see that happening, though. I think this is definitely wishful thinking on the part of conservatives. And I hearken back all the way to yesterday when we were talking about the president's complete about-face on patriotism versus party. And this is what you said, and this is why I think there's no way he doesn't run for re-election.
There is nothing to Barack Obama other than empty ambition and other than his core belief is that he should be in power.
And therefore, there's no reason for him not to run for re-election, because if he doesn't, then he can't still be in power.
You know, Greg, of all the folks you've ever quoted in this program, that guy is the smartest one you have. interesting to hear myself and listening to who is that guy? I pretty much concur with you. What's kind of interesting is that I don't think it's necessarily wishful thinking on the part of Republicans or conservatives, because if you listen to people writing about this, at least in the conservative blogosphere, a lot of them say, boy, if he subs out and Hillary jumps in, that could be a lot tougher. That could really save the Democrats' chances this year. So it's almost a apocalyptic scenario for Republicans that they don't have to deal with it. I stand by what I said yesterday. I just kind of observed, Greg. I mean, imagine if Barack Obama didn't campaign. What would he do? Govern? I mean, that's, you know, this is a guy who spends half his time at fundraisers and doing bus tours that look like campaign tours and town halls that look like campaign rallies and taping messages from the White House for fundraisers and stuff. What would he do? I think he'd just kind of tool around because he doesn't want to actually, you know, meet with the cabinet or reach common ground with Republicans or do anything. You know, certainly not going to like address the country on Libya on camera from his, you know, in his bathing suit up in Martha's Vineyard. So I have a very hard time imagining Obama not doing this. And I understand why people might think that. I think Peggy Noonan had an interesting column that basically said that Obama is walking around like a defeated man already. I think this is a guy who realized that the presidency is much harder than he expected, much more challenging, and that his gifts have failed him, that he's always been able to talk himself out of trouble throughout much of his career. Interesting in looking at all this, though, is that I think that if Obama could not win a second term, he'd often said, oh, I want to be a great, I'd rather be a really good one-term president than a mediocre two-term president. And, well, Mr. President, I think being a really great one-term president is really not among your options right now. I do think that he may see his defeat as a bit of martyrdom, as a bit of, you know, I did the hard things for this country, things that weren't popular, but things that needed to be done. And maybe we haven't, you know, evolved as far as I'd hoped. You know, there will be ways for him and his acolytes to spin a defeat into not his fault, but the country's fault. You know, not his failure, but our failure, and our failure to recognize how super duper and terrific he was. And so I think you can kind of see the seeds of that narrative being planted right now, particularly in places like the New York Times. And so I think that this is a coping mechanism that you often see from folks. It's never their fault. They never screw up. They never make things worse. And so for Obama, the idea of a noble defeat may be the easier to contemplate than, well, gee, I guess I never really was as good as the hype suggested in 2008.
Yeah, we'll never hear that. So I think that helps to explain why the self-pity tour is already underway, because if he doesn't end up winning re-election, he's got a year and a half head start into his feeling sorry for himself, which he can carry well into retirement, as far as I'm concerned, after 4 years in office. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Wednesday for the next Three Martini Lunch. Thank you.